And welcome to the Trade Finance Distribution Initiative podcast. This is the business community for trade finance institutions and service providers unlocking the future of trade finance. I'm Doris Kononovich. Good to have you here today. Now, as you know, one of the priorities of the TFDI is the use of digital innovations and technology and how they can influence and fast track the process of trade finance distribution and unlock this asset class. Now, in the past, we've heard from a few guests from tech-enabled brands and even from the Law Commissioner, Sarah Green, on the development of the ETD bill and investigations into laws around digital assets. Now, our guest today has been a member of the House of Lords since 2013, and more specifically, a member of the House of Lords Science and Technology Select Committee. His core policy focus surrounds digital technologies such as AI and blockchain and areas of application in fintech and beyond. So do join me in wishing a warm welcome to Lord Holmes of Richmond. Chris, it's lovely, lovely to have you here today.
Thank you so much for that very kind introduction. It's great to be here.
Over to you being in the House of Lords. Now, you've been here since 2013, I believe. Can you tell us a little bit about your role within the House of Lords and your journey being a member?
Thank you again. It's still amazing to me that I'm in the House of Lords. I'm a working class kid from the West Midlands, went to the local comprehensive school, worked very hard, managed to get into Cambridge University, but I could never have imagined that I'd be in the House of Lords. To be here is extraordinary, but more than that, it's an extraordinary opportunity to try in my small way to get stuff done. And the stuff that I want to get done is very much around that combination, that most powerful of partnerships around talent and technology, inclusion and innovation. So a particular focus around fintech, AI, distributed ledger technologies, and indeed all of the technologies which make up whatever we choose to call them, emerging technologies, new technologies, 4IR technologies, whatever umbrella term we put on them. But I'm interested in them for their technology, sure, fascinating, going deep into that, but more so for the public good that they can be put to. How can we drive the difference by combining those human-led technologies for public good, for common good?
Absolutely, and one of these such initiatives that have been quite burning in the last few months is the Electronic Trade Documents Bill, which has sat through in the House of Lords as well. Can you give us a bit of a scoop as to what's happening in Parliament, how this was received internally, and what we can expect going forward?
In short, the Electronic Trade Documents Bill is one of the most important bills that most people haven't heard of. And certainly since the bill was introduced in Parliament and before indeed, I've been doing all I can to raise parliamentarians' knowledge and interest in the bill, but broader than that, the wider public, businesses who may be able to benefit from the bill. It's an incredibly straightforward piece of legislation. It's a short bill, but none the worse for that, because if we pass it, it has the potential, not inevitable, but it has the potential to be truly transformational, not just for international trade, but through that, economic benefit, social benefit, environmental benefit. So we're in the committee stage, which will start in the new year. We had second reading a few weeks ago. That's a general debate on all of the elements of the bill. But when we get into committee, it becomes interesting because amendments can be brought to bear. And that's where we try and make the bill as good as it can be, as it possibly can be, to have the biggest impact when it finally goes into statute.
That's really fascinating because, you know, this is a highly anticipated bill for all the reasons that you've mentioned. But a huge part of it as well is ESG, which has been a huge burner this year and last year, and a big talking point in the previous past. Now, what impact do you think the ETD will have environmentally?
If we consider how international trade is currently structured, it's a understandably but disappointingly papery exercise, really. And the reason for that is because it's very different to straightforward contracts, which, as many people will obviously know, electronic contracts have existed in form for quite some time now. But the difference with trade documents, such as bills of lading, is they're possessive in nature. So you hold the paper, you hold the goods. So what that means is, it's exactly so. It's very clear, very understandable, and has been the basis of international trade for centuries. But what does that mean environmentally? Well, say, for example, the cargo is just coming into the port of Singapore, for example, but the paper, the bill of lading, is in London. Someone will have to go to Heathrow, jump on a plane, go to Singapore, transfer, make sure all of the formalities for transfer have been satisfied. Then the next person will possess that paper and thus possess the goods. So they're possessive documents. But what that means is currently the time it's taking for transfer is on average between 7 to 10 days. So the economic impact of that is obviously clear, but the environmental impact of that, of having to go with the paper to where the goods are, and that time lag, obviously critical negative environmental impact as well. Whereas with the electronic trade documents bill, when it comes into law, that will mean that those 7 to 10 days, or indeed more, will collapse into perhaps 20 seconds. Economic, very good news. Environmental, tremendous news. And as you rightly say, we should all be firmly, thoroughly and persistently focused on ESG. And to me, I think probably we should think of ESG as existential, seismic and global.
Very much indeed. Now, looking at this, because, you know, everyone talks about sustainable finance and ways we can actually implement a sustainable module for doing business, but actualizing it and adopting it is always sort of the challenge when we talk about institutional investors who have worked in a certain way, or service providers who bend to the will of institutional investors because they've worked in a certain way. What other ways do you think we can look into adopting a more sustainable finance that is future-proof?
It's a great question. And again, it should be one of the top questions for our time and for all times, really. It's great that we're all able to recycle, have the blue box, green box, brown box, purple box, varying across the country and indeed around the world. That's good, and it's a good effort. It's good that we've reduced plastic bag usage in the UK, I think 95%, and they're all good initiatives. But the truth of it is, as individuals, the biggest and most impact we can have for the environment is how we deploy our finances, how we invest, how we spend, what our pension fund does, and so on and so forth. And in many ways, though at first blush it seems complex to start getting involved with that, in many ways it's the easiest thing that we can do on an environmental front, because for that effort, the return is in multiples. So it's really key to understand that we have an ability individually, and then with that collective action, to make such an impact and to truly ensure that if something is described as green finance, that it really is green finance and not just a wrapper.
Absolutely. No washing of what the terminology is supposed to be versus what it actually is. Well, you're watching and listening to the Trade Finance Distribution Initiative podcast with Lord Holmes of Richmond. We've been discussing a future-proof and sustainable finance ecosystem and laws that can actually safeguard this. Now, the TFD initiative has rolled out the very first trade finance-backed security token called the Trada under the XDC network and TradeTech. How is the UK progressing to integrate digital assets and tokenizations into law, in your opinion?
We're in a good place in the UK when it comes to digital finance, but there is still a heck of a journey to go, and we must get on that. So, as well as the Electronic Trade Documents Bill currently in Parliament, we've also got the Financial Services and Markets Bill, and that will be the biggest change, the biggest transformation to financial services regulation in a generation. It's massive, and its potential is similarly huge. What is in there is the start, and it is only a start, of what we need to do to understand how we truly transform markets and transform our approach to digital assets, to DAOs, across the piece. Where there's another good tie-up here with the ETD bill is that the Law Commission produced the ETD bill. And similarly, the Law Commission are doing great work in terms of consulting across all of these potential deployments and what legal frameworks will need to be in place for the successful deployment of digital assets. Allied to that as well, the third element, we've currently got a master of the rolls, the second most senior law officer in the country, second most senior judge in Sir Geoffrey Voss, who is probably the most informed judge that we've ever had in terms of understanding the potential of digital assets, the potential of the underlying technology, not least distributed ledger technology. So when you put all of those together, there are three reasons to be cheerful, but we need to get on with it because the opportunities are immense. You could see significant stock exchange reform. You could see a complete transformation of the London Metals Exchange, for example. And we all know how significant, it's not just about gold, but how significant lithium, cobalt are, for example. So huge potential. Put that together with the power of English law, put it together with the financial services ecosystem we've got in London and indeed across the UK, and there's a huge opportunity, but we need to get on with it. We need some more pace from all parties. We need to understand that though it's an opportunity, we have to ensure that becomes a reality. And it's, if we get it right, it should benefit citizens up and down the country. Economic benefits, yes, but again, social, environmental benefits across the piece. Finally on this, when we look at what the central bank are doing, the Bank of England, in terms of their work around a central bank digital currency, incredibly important. It's vital that the bank are involved. They have such a position, not just in the UK, but globally. And it's good the work they're doing. But again, it would be great just to see just a bit more pace coming from the bank in terms of how that will look and just a bit more pace to your timescale. Because again, it could be truly transformational for both citizen and state alike.
Yeah, I mean, everyone stands to benefit from this, I would reckon. It's been, as I always say, 140 years, you know, in the running. So it's about time for us to actually have this transformational change in the way that, you know, we use digital assets. Now, you've also been known to be quite vocal about the struggles of fintechs and digital with digital inclusion. Why is this an important aspect of finance to highlight?
I think, firstly, the problem is highlighted if we consider how all too often the pernicious negative powers of financial exclusion and digital exclusion all too often walk hand in hand, leading to terrible outcomes and just talent kept down, unenabled, disempowered. The biggest example being all too often those who have the least being forced to pay the most for essential services such as power, electricity. That can't be a positive force in a civilized society. What we have with the digital opportunity is a chance to really break this pernicious force that has dogged our nation for decades. So there's a really interesting pilot a few years ago done by the government in terms of a tokenization of benefits on a smartphone enabled on a distributed ledger platform. Very small proof of concept, but really good. It showed the technology could work, but it showed far more importantly the emancipation of the people, that rather than having to perceive, as is tragically all too often the case, as people as passive benefit recipients, they could become active participants in the proof of concept, and through that, active citizens with choices through that human-led technology. And even if one was to look at it purely on economics, which I certainly don't, it just makes economic sense for everybody to be financially included. It really does. It's a huge, huge hill, but it should be all of our missions to climb it.
No, absolutely. I think inclusion is important in all our areas and aspects of life. And as the world transforms, we want to make sure that we're carrying everyone along. And no one kind of feels that because of maybe their social standing, they're unable to get access to certain amenities or works of life. Now, what other policies and innovations are you currently working on, and which do you think will contribute to closing the SME financing gap?
I think one of the most critical things that we need to really get done is around digital ID. It's critical that both as individuals and indeed entities, things, stuff, goods can have a digital identity that can be relied upon, because so much of the transformational power of these technologies will be supercharged if we can have a system of digital ID with interoperability built in, so it can have that international outward facing perspective, and crucially will be rooted in security, in safety, in privacy, in all those concerns. The most obvious example of how this would work is if somebody wanted to go and get a drink. Well, now, if there was some question, you'd be asked to produce some kind of identity document, a passport, a driving license. But the reality is that person asking for that document doesn't need to know your name, doesn't need to know your date of birth, doesn't need to know anything about you, save this one fact. All they need to know is that for that moment that you order a drink, that you are of the age in that jurisdiction to be able to enjoy that drink for the time that you enjoy it. So a very clear, specific and time-limited credential that you could transmit to that person without them having to know or having any right to know anything else about you whatsoever. So when you look at that in a social context and an economic context, you can really see the benefits that can be brought to bear. Again, having the citizen as sovereign at the centre of it, protected, safe, secure, privacy, absolutely essential to have in there, but then able to operate far more effectively, far more in real time in any particular transactional relationship.
ease of access and ease of functioning, basically, is what we're out for. Now, Chris, before I let you go, I have one more question to ask you, and that is for 2023, what are you looking forward to? What are you looking forward to the most this year when it comes to bills and new laws and policy adoption?
Very much the Financial Services and Markets Bill. It will take probably the majority of the first quarter of my time. But the reason why I highlight that again is because it brings together so many of the areas that I've been working in. So it has financial inclusion potential. It has all of the issues around access to cash. It has all of the issues around fintechs, potential digitization of certain sectors. And it offers the opportunity to have the regulatory framework, which will have both consumer interests and protection and the right level of the competitive objectives set out in there. Because it shouldn't be seen that consumer protection and competitiveness are diametrically opposed. They certainly are if things are wrongly structured, but there's no reason not to be able to structure those in a regulatory framework, and indeed with the right functioning regulator to enable this to be beneficial for the individual, for the economy, for the society, and very much in an outward facing global approach, which we absolutely need, because we may by fluke, chance or choice happen to be standing on the soil of the United Kingdom. But if we don't all consider ourselves to be world citizens, well, we're missing quite a lot of what it is to be human.
Indeed. And that's the most important thing in all of this, is seeing the human element here and seeing how we can help ourselves, seeing how we can help our planet, and how we can advance our nation and advance the efforts that, you know, have come centuries up to today. Now, I think it's an absolutely exciting future, 2023, and definitely looking forward to all the bills that are in the House of Lords, moving on now House of Commons and such, and, you know, excited to see what comes out of it. I just want to say thank you, a big, big thank you to all the hard work you do within the House of Lords, and, you know, looking forward to as well all your wishes coming through, because we're all aligned in your vision to actually see a more prosperous future indeed.
Thank you very much indeed. It's been such a pleasure to be with you. I look forward to coming back at some point in 2023 and telling you more about how the bills have progressed.
That would be absolutely delighted. You're welcome anytime. All right, a big thank you to all our listeners and YouTube viewers out there for all the love and support. Do remember you can join the conversation on our YouTube page and subscribe to all the various channels to stay in the loop. We've been speaking today to Chris Holmes, who's a member of House of Lords and the most decorated British Paralympian swimmer and all-round amazing humanitarian. Thank you so much for being our guest on the show. My name is Doris Kononovich. Till next time, see you all again.